Well, as you probably know, this week the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on two landmark cases regarding the legal recognition of marriage between same-sex couples. Professor Dale Carpenter is a law professor at the University of Minnesota, and he's an expert in the areas of constitutional law, the First Amendment, and sexual orientation and the law, and he joins us now by phone. Hi, Professor Carpenter. Thanks for being here tonight.
My pleasure.
Well, first of all, please tell us about the cases that the court was holding hearings on this week. Can you just explain a little bit about them?
Sure. Both of them were related to same-sex marriage. One of them related to whether states can exclude same-sex couples from marriage, and the other related to whether the federal government can exclude same-sex couples from its benefits for married couples. So those are the basic cases. One involved, the state case involved the so-called Prop 8. It was passed by California back in 2008 as a constitutional amendment like the one we had in Minnesota last November, but it passed in California. And the other one involved the Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed by Congress back in 1996.
Did they choose to hear these two together since they're basically on the same topic?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think you know, it happened that both of these cases were coming to a, you know, had been filed and were coming to a resolution at about the same time. And so it does make some sense. The one thing that was surprising about it is the court didn't really have to take the Prop 8 case. It could have ducked the issue if it had wanted to.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't have to explain why it refuses to take a case. In the DOMA case, that involved a federal law being struck down as unconstitutional, and the court almost always takes those cases, so that was pretty certain.
Mm-hmm.
The one that they could have avoided if they'd wanted to was the Prop 8 case.
So what does it say that they chose not to avoid it?
Well, we don't know yet. They may still avoid. I mean, it could say lots of things. It could say that they want to rule on the constitutional right to same-sex marriage, either to say yes, there is one, or no, there isn't one. Or they may want to rule on a technical legal issue called standing, which is that not everybody's entitled to bring a lawsuit just because they don't like something that the government does or that a court does.
Mm-hmm. So standing means you that you have some kind of stake in the issue?
You have some special stake in the issue. Your stake in the issue is not just like any other citizen who doesn't like the law or something. It's you have a special stake in the decision. And so they may have wanted to, you know, decide that issue, but you know, it only takes four justices to hear a case.
Hmm.
Doesn't take five. It takes five to win, but it only takes four to take the case. And so sometimes four justices can basically force the issue on the remaining five.
Interesting. I didn't know that little detail.
So, yeah, that may have happened here.
Okay. So what were the main arguments on both sides? You were actually in Washington at the time, right?
I was. I attended both of the arguments, and they were held on consecutive days. Prop 8 was on Tuesday, and DOMA was on Wednesday. In the Prop 8 case, the argument was that there is a constitutional right to marry, and that right should include same-sex couples. And it was also that you can't discriminate against gays and lesbians, which is what the Prop 8 did by refusing to let them get married. And those were the basic claims in that case. The DOMA case was different because it said the federal government can't distinguish among valid marriages recognized in the states by choosing to recognize some of them, the opposite-sex marriages, but not other marriages, the same-sex marriages. So there was an overlap in the cases, and that, you know, both of them involved exclusions of same-sex marriage, but there is a distinction because one involves state power and the other involves federal power.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear any arguments on either side that were especially new or surprising to you?
I think we did learn some things. We don't yet know what the outcome is going to be, although we can hazard guesses about it. I think we did learn some things about what the outcome is likely not to be. I think we're not likely to get a ruling from the Supreme Court that declares every state in the country must recognize gay marriages. I think there was enough skepticism about that kind of a broad order from the court that, you know, we're probably not going to get that, which is what some people had been hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think we also won't get a decision that says there is no right to same-sex marriage. I think we're probably going to be somewhere in the middle. So that's something we learned. I think another interesting moment in the exchange was the lawyer who was defending Proposition 8, excluding same-sex couples from marriage, was asked, can you think of any other instance in which it would be legitimate or rational for a state to discriminate against gays and lesbians except for marriage? Can you think of any other instance in which that would be okay? And he said flatly, I can't think of one.
Huh.
Now, this was the lawyer for the people who are against gay marriage, who said, in every other area, we must treat gays and lesbians the same. We can't discriminate against them. This is the last bastion, the last one that we can make a distinction in.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very significant concession, I thought, on his part, because it really did suggest that the whole country has moved on the question of the rights of gays and lesbians toward greater support for it. And it's harder to make arguments against that equality in judicial forum.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a surprising moment for me. There were a couple of others.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Professor Dale Carpenter. He's a law professor at the University of Minnesota, and he specializes in sexual orientation and the law, among other things. And we're talking with him about the Supreme Court oral arguments that were heard this week. In your work, Dale, as a law professor and a scholar, do you attend Supreme Court hearings quite a bit?
No, actually. This was only the second time I've gone to a Supreme Court hearing. The last time I went to a Supreme Court hearing, because it's in Washington, it's a lot of trouble to go and, you know, stay there, and sometimes it's hard to get in if it's a big popular case like these were. The last time I attended a Supreme Court oral argument was in a case called Lawrence versus Texas, which was 10 years to the day prior to the argument in the Proposition 8 case. It was 10 years to the day before that. And that was a case that involved a Texas sodomy law, where Texas had criminalized any kind of intimacy, sexual intimacy, certain kinds of sexual intimacy between gay couples.
Mm-hmm.
It had made it criminal. And the court said that violated the Constitution. And the gays and lesbians have a right to privacy and to make their own choices about their relationships, just like other people do. And in a sense, that case helped to set up what happened at the court on Tuesday and Wednesday, because it cleared the path to, you know, to say you're not criminals anymore. Now what do we do with you?
Right. And you actually wrote a book about that case. Is that correct?
I did, yes.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like to be in the Supreme Court listening to this. I mean, it must be a remarkable experience.
Well, it was extraordinary. I mean, first of all, you know, you wait in line for hours and hours and hours because hundreds of people want to get into a very small courtroom. That courtroom doesn't seat more than about 200 or so people. And it's a very, you're tightly packed in. And so you wait in this long line on the sidewalk in front of the Supreme Court building all night. I got there at 2 and 3 a.m. To do it. And I barely got into one, and I didn't get into the other, even after having waited that long. And then, of course, as the morning comes of the argument, there are groups outside chanting and singing and holding up signs for one side or the other. So you've got an atmosphere that takes on a kind of political rally effect. And then you get inside the courtroom, and, of course, the Supreme Court courtroom is a very grand, ornate, elaborate place with friezes along the top of the walls, very high ceilings, you know, 50 feet high or whatever it is, huge floor-to-ceiling windows with dark velvet drapery, high-backed chairs for the justices that are in wood and leather. And then, of course, there are nine of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty imposing thing. And you can see them, and they can see you. It's not like, you know, you're way back in an audience somewhere. You're, you know, 30 feet from Chief Justice Roberts. And the lawyer stands up in front of them, and he's basically got them from one ear to, you know, one eye to the other, arrayed across him or her. And they're firing questions at you, and the audience is there, and the people who are there are all very, very interested in what's happening. There was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of anxiety. There was a lot of anticipation. I mean, for many people, this moment was the culmination of decades of personal struggle and work. And so there was a lot. There was a kind of electricity in the air, and you hung on every word. What is, you want to find out what these justices are saying? Can you see anything in the expression on their face? Are there any word choices? What kinds of questions are they asking? All of these things are racing through your mind as they are speaking, and the lawyers don't even get to finish a sentence before the justices interrupt them and start asking questions.
I suppose every people who are interested in the topic, which is everyone there, is analyzing every tiny little detail and every nuance.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone there is very focused on what's happening and very knowledgeable. I mean, as I say, a lot of these people on either side have devoted a substantial part of their personal and professional lives to this issue. So they know what the arguments are, and they know what to watch for. And, you know, at the same time, it's a very formal atmosphere. You don't break out in cheers. You know, when you hear something,
right.
You like, you don't boo or hiss when you don't like something. I mean, you have to sit there quiet and still. You can't get up. You know, you can't clap. You know, there's laughter on occasion, but not too much. And so you have all these emotions, but you have to keep them in.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty dignified.
Yes.
I appreciate you explaining it for us because, you know, of course, we only see the artist's renderings, you know.
Right.
It's great
right.
to get all that description. Thank you.
So, my pleasure, yeah.
So you mentioned that, you know, there's conjecture about what's going to happen now. What do you think is going to happen now? What is the court going to do?
Well, I think we are going to get a... I mean, let me first offer the caveat that you can't necessarily predict what the outcome is going to be based on the questions that justices ask and so forth, because sometimes they just ask questions to be devil's advocates. Sometimes they just ask questions to feel out the strengths and weaknesses in different arguments and answer remaining questions in their mind. So it's not a reliable predictor. But having said that, I would hazard a guess to say, with not much certainty, that the court is likely to kind of punt on the Prop 8 case and say, we're not going to decide this big constitutional question of a right to same-sex marriage, but we are going to say that there was no standing to bring this case as a technical, legal, constitutional matter. And so we're not even going to address the question of whether there's a right to same-sex marriage, because this case should never have been brought in court. And then I think that means that the case goes back to California, and there will be possibly considerable wrangling over what the effect of that is, whether same-sex couples will be able to get married out there, whether there might be, there might be a more limited effect. We don't really know. In that case, and it has the effect of delaying things for a while. In the DOMA case, I think there is a combination of justices who will probably vote to hold that the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. And the combination will be some of the justices are primarily concerned that the Congress was discriminating against gays and lesbians for no good reason. I mean, why recognize some marriages but not other marriages? It's a matter, you know, that's not, there's no justification for that. It's not procreation. There's just no reason for this, except you just don't like gay people, and that's not a good reason in our constitutional tradition. Other justices, maybe one or two, will instead see this as a matter of Congress exercising too much power over the states. Marriage is something the states have always controlled. Mm-hmm. And this is Congress inserting itself into those state areas. So there's a federalism concern. And that's the a brief that I submitted to the court saying that this was an overreach on the part of Congress into something controlled by the states. So the combination of these two cases, if I'm right, is going to be we will continue to have very decentralized democratic decision-making on this issue. So no state will be forced to recognize gay marriages, but if they do, those couples should get federal benefits as well as state benefits.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when is the court likely to issue? Is it a ruling or opinion?
It would be an opinion, a ruling, you could call it either, but it would be certainly by the end of June. It could come at any time, but these are significant enough cases and there are enough difficult issues involved that I would not expect a ruling before June.
Okay.
But certainly by the end of June, that's when the court session ends.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor, it was so delightful to talk with you. Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to add before we let you go?
Not at all. It was my pleasure to join you, and I think we've covered it.
Great. Thank you so much.